Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast with a difference. I'm Joe Haddo and I'm joined today by two singers and songwriters who both, in their own way, have inspired and delighted me and many others with their unique styles of music and lyrical poetry. My first guest is a columnist, writer, songsmith, who was the lead singer of The Auteurs and one third of Black Box recorder Luke Haynes. Welcome to Book Off.
Thank you.
Lovely to see you. And next to him, an author, guitarist, t-shirt collector and lead singer of Carter the Unstoppable Sex Machine, Jim Bob. Hello to you.
Hello.
So lovely to have you both here. I've had a really crap day, and the thought of doing this with you has really put a smile on my face.
Well, I wonder what you're going to say then.
Yeah. I don't often hear that, really.
No, it's cheered me up knowing that I was going to be in your company and talking about books and music and various other things. So thank you both for being here. Jim Bob, In the Shadow of My Former Self is your new autobiography, and it's your second. Does it follow on from Goodnight, Jim Bob?
It follows on exactly where the other one ends. So basically the first one, I mean, it's the first thing I wrote, or the first book I wrote. So it was really just about a kind of crazy things that happen when you're on tour as a band, minus all the usual stuff. So left out all the drugs and sex, which is my excuse for there not having been any for 10 years. And then it kind of ended, and then I sort of had this other various careers, writing books and solo records and a disco pop band and kind of things like that. And so then it was more, but all the time I was doing that, it was somewhat in the shadow of this former thing. So I was sort of writing about coming to terms with that.
Because it was a pretty mad decade, if we think about sort of late 80s to late 90s for you. That 10 years was... There's a lot going on.
Yeah, especially the first 5 years. The second half of the decade was maybe less fun. But different kind of anecdotes. Whereas with the, with the second one, there weren't so many of these crazy anecdotes because I hadn't really been very many places. There was nothing to write about. Nothing really happened at gigs as such. So I kind of had to sort of write a lot more about myself and be more sort of, self-analytical.
Yeah. we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. This is probably something that a lot of musicians get asked, but did you two ever cross paths in the 90s or more recently at
No,
all?
Well, we only met recently. We now reside on Cherry Red Records, where when I'm laughing, I'm saying that. I mean, they would laugh as well.
Yeah.
So it's a fine roster. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, I think currently label mates. I mean, apart from all the kind of old reissue stuff, which is pretty much everything, the new acts, as it were, on the label are Hawkwind, Van de Graaff Generator, The Fall used to be, of course, but no longer, and The 3 Degrees.
Bananarama, are they?
I don't think they've recorded anything new.
Oh, no,
but
right.
So it's good. But what they don't have is an office Christmas party for the bands, which would be good.
Yeah.
That would be
almost inconvenient though, because of where they are, where they're based.
Well, I suppose difficult getting The 3 Degrees over to Gunnersbury.
We met at the party. What was it there? 85th anniversary.
It was the 180th anniversary of Cherry Red.
And there were so many people there who I didn't recognise, but I think they were.
That was amazing.
They used to be people.
Well, there's a lot of prog rockers.
There were, yeah.
And stuff. There, I spoke to. I particularly like Gary Brooker from, and I like Procol Harum a lot. So I kind of I went up to Gary Brookle and introduced myself. Well, not, I didn't say I am so-and-so, but I said I am a big fan of your work, to which he just rolled his eyes. And sort of said words to the effect of, well, I'm not, you know. So I thought I'd just leave it.
You released an album last year, another solo record, Luke.
I did, yeah.
I Sometimes Dream of Glue. Yeah. And what's the story behind this one?
Goodness me, you're asking me about a concept album that was out about 8 months ago. It was about a settlement just off the West Way of people, diminutive people who were addicted to sniffing glue in the motorway sidings. It was kind of due to a kind of an accident in World War II, container ship of dangerous chemicals. That kind of thing.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. As far as I remember.
Yeah. 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 And 8 months ago now, you're probably working on something else. Jimbo, you mentioned about the book, the autobiography, and how you had to be a bit more self-analytical. It's very much an exploration of who you are now and who you were then, isn't it? Do you think there are two different Jims?
Well, apparently there are, yeah. I mean, that's what my mum always used to say, that. But that, it was quite simple. It was more that there was the shy Jim, who was the kind of normal one. Which is probably, I'm sort of midway, I'm still quite close to that one at this moment in time. And then there's the sort of the one that's on stage that wishing death on politicians and you know, throwing himself off stage and all that kind of stuff. That always surprises. It's, my mum didn't really understand it, so she always said I had two different character personalities. She had about six to be my mum, but so she should know. But so.
Is there something about that presence on stage? Do you sort of embody something? Is there something there that makes you be able to wish death on politicians, for example, or whatever?
Maybe. I don't know. But I mean, because it's almost a cliche, isn't it, that people in sort of show business talk about being, shy and terrified of crowds and all the rest of it. But then when they go on stage, suddenly it's all, you know, all the magic happens and that. So there must be, it must be quite normal. It's not that surprising, I don't think, that to me anyway, that when you hear people say that are actually, you know, racked with nerves and that before they sort of go on.
Well, it's a bit like authors. I mean, authors sort of often don't like to do the interview thing and do the festival thing because, of course, they sit mainly on their own and they write a book and the book gets published and they think, well, my work is done, people will read it now. And then, of course, people like me go, come and do this thing or talk to me in front of loads of people, and often they don't want to do it.
Mm. The older I get, the less I think about any of the stuff I do. I don't really analyse it anymore. I used to kind of analyse stuff when I was a lot younger, and especially when you kind of, when you know you've got to be interviewed about things, you think, oh, okay, I've got to kind of have something to say about this. But I don't know what any of it is. I don't care.
Really. Any of it in terms of anything from the earlier bands?
No idea.
No?
No idea. It's just all comes out. Let it come out, I say.
Yeah. And is that
better out than in? That's the
absolutely.
Old, that's
absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Third album in.
Yes, it's just a sort of, like, yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of, this is a question for both of you, I suppose, you know, in terms of people's reactions to your music, you know, because we get into an act at a certain time and we might love one of the albums, whether it's an earlier or a later one or a different project, and you know, those songs become something to someone. Mm. So when you are constantly making new music or you're writing new things, and there's often a harking for some of that older stuff, is that something you don't mind? Do you appreciate that, or would you rather just keep looking forward, as it were?
Well, I think, as Jim sort of alluded to, about the first 5 years, it's very much, I think almost every band probably goes through that to one degree or another, that the people, because you're sort of new and you're a new thing, and the way that sort of, you know, the way we sort of look at culture or whatever, you know, it's the sort of like the new thing is the exciting thing. And then, you know, you kind of get to album number 58 and people are so slightly less interested, even though album number 58 might be the masterpiece. Yeah. I mean, I early on it was like when the Auteurs were kind of, you know, oddly very big in France, bigger than we ever were here, for a sort of like the first album. And then the second album, which was a bit different, deliberately so, on my part. We were sort of seen as sort of traitors because it wasn't. It's like, well, you've got the first one. What do you want? What you just listen to it twice?
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, and if you want the third one, then listen to it three times. Listen to the third. I don't know. You know, it's kind of a weird idea to unless you're the Ramones, but that's a different. That's the idea of repetition, obviously, which is important. But, you know, yeah, it's kind of weird.
So, yeah, I mean, I used to say, you know, years ago when people say, what's your best record or whatever? And I'd say, oh, you know, it's the new one.
Yeah.
But sort of recently I've realised that it is,
yeah.
You know, in a way, the best ones are those ones. So, you know, with Carter, it would be like the first and second album, you know, especially the second album, because that's the purest, that's Carter at its...
Yeah,
ultimate
yeah.
Carterness. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's got the best songs on it or the best lyrics or anything like that, but just everything else that's tied up into it, the reaction to it and it's the time that it came out means that it is the kind of, so I sort of accept that. I sort of accept that that album I did in 1991 is better than the four novels I've written and the 15 albums I've done since. I sort of know it is kind of thing.
Yeah.
Once I realise that, it doesn't matter. You know, I don't really.
No, I get what you're saying.
It's annoying. Sorry. It is annoying when people immediately reference it. I mean, it happens to me a lot on Twitter particularly. And I sort of joke about that in the book. But, I'll say, I've got a new novel coming out this Thursday, and immediately someone will say, oh, I remember that time you punched Philip Schofield on television.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, it's so quick.
It was good, though.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really care. I mean, I looked at my sort of, it was PRS day about sort of like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I looked at my PRS statement, and it's all from two songs that were written about 20 years ago.
Which one was out of interest?
Lenny Valentino and a song called Showgirl, which was the first. And it's first all from that.
Is that true? Is that
right? Yeah, there's a bunch of... And even the stuff, the Black Box Recorder stuff, which was sold more and with actual hits. That's not played on the radio. So I don't really care, you know, as long as some of it's making some money, and it doesn't really matter to me at all, you know.
Nice to know that also those songs are living on, though, in a way.
Because they're timeless.
Because they're timeless, see? Exactly. Like both of your early albums, absolutely timeless. Yeah. But of course, you're both writers, you're both authors as well. Jim, you were mentioning it, that you've written four books previously, I think?
Four novels.
Four novels, another autobiography, and now this one.
Yeah.
So is that something that you were doing alongside making music, or did you sort of leave music for a bit and think I'm going to write?
Well, when I wrote the first Carter book, I did that kind of after Carter had split up, and then when I was sort of in between things, it seemed like I just started doing it. So I had no intention of writing books at all, and it was only because I wrote that and then it came out and I thought, oh, that looks nice. That was Cherry Red, right. Yeah. Because nobody wanted to publish it at all. No one was interested. I had sort of one publisher suggested turning it into a novel, you know, and which ironically, since then, they've suggested turning my novels into autobiographies. Any excuse to not do any work.
Yeah.
But, you know, after that's such a thrill to have an actual book come out that it made me write another one, and that, you know, that turned out to be a novel. And then after that, I got an agent, so I didn't deliberately look for one. I was approached by one, you know, so then I wrote another one, and then it kind of snowballed in very, very slowly.
Because you obviously enjoy it as well.
No, absolutely. I don't enjoy it at all. I enjoyed writing the last book. The novels I struggle with.
Right.
I don't know why I do it. Do you know what I mean?
To see it on the shelf, apparently.
That's the only thing, you know. It's a kind of... it's not for my entertainment, it's for everybody else. Yeah. It's a very selfless act. But I honestly don't. I did at first. I loved doing it at first. And I'd get up early in the morning. I'd straight away start writing and stay up late at night. But now it's sort of, you know, anything to avoid doing it. You know? So I really don't, you know, I don't enjoy it at all.
Good man.
I love that honesty. Yeah. And Luke, you had a couple of books published back 2010, 2012.
Yeah.
Do you remember, was there as a bigger moment as Jim when your book appeared on the shelves?
It's difficult to say, really. I would say that I enjoyed writing the first one, and then I think the novelty wore off a bit, and I didn't really enjoy writing the second one that much, and I haven't bothered writing one since.
No, I was going to ask whether there was something else coming, but maybe not.
It's quite hard work, and there's another thing that it's even worse than making albums in a way, because when you make an album, you're kind of hidden away, and you're recording it and you mix it. For ages, I'm mixing an album at the moment, so I go out to the pub and see people I know and whatnot, and they say, you know, so what have you been doing? I'm mixing the album, and I see them like, 6 weeks later, I'm mixing the album. What have you, you know, is it not finished yet? You know, it's like, what else have you done? I haven't done anything. I've just mixed the album. And when you do a book, it's even worse because what have you been doing? I've been writing the book, and you actually haven't. It feels like you've done nothing with your life. Yeah. Weirdly, it does. It feels like your life is kind of vanishing. For your eyes, a little bit, you know.
And the people you live with, even though they know you've been doing something, they think you've been doing nothing as well.
Yeah.
Because because they've been doing, you know, gardening or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas you've just been sitting
obviously,
in
I don't mean, I think neither of us want to sound, we don't wish to speak for Jim, but I don't want to sound ungrateful. The fact that it is obviously it's obviously something that some people would love to get the opportunity to write books.
I think it's quite honest and refreshing to have you say that, both of you, because
I feel a bit bad now. I think I went too far.
No, I mean, that was good. It encouraged me to kind of go a bit further as well.
Because I think a lot of authors would not necessarily say the same thing, but, you know, I don't think anyone's honestly sat there thinking, oh, I loved every minute of writing my novel, my book, my memoir, you know, because it's quite a hard task. And also, I guess, and I could be wrong here, when you're making an album, as you sort of mentioned there, Luke, you know, you're working on ideas that you might have picked up or worked on over a series of months or years, you know, and you've sort of had time to put all those down and got the little snippets, and then you go in and you sort of make the album. And whereas, I guess, writing, it's like blank sheet, off you go, and that's maybe a bit more daunting.
Yeah, I think so. I think the thought of having to sort of fill out 200 pages.
Yeah,
it's quite at the beginning.
With music, you sort of, I find that I know if it's good.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I sort of think that's all right, and then you can play it to someone, and they that's good.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah.
With a book, you think like all the way through, you're thinking, is this any good?
Yeah,
you know, and a year passes. And then you finally show it to someone, and they say, "Well, you know," and then they read it in like, you know, in 2 hours, and tell you why it isn't any good.
I mean, I should also say I don't really consider. I mean, I know Jim's written some fiction, but I don't really consider myself to be an author because I've just knocked out a couple of memoirs. I think
you're a writer.
I can write stuff. I write stuff, but I'm not an author.
I've struggled with it as well, to be honest, with author. But then again, I've never thought of myself as a musician, which is, I always feel a bit, oh, we're not really a musician. Because I don't, you know, I couldn't jam.
Oh, no, but you wouldn't want to anyway.
No, I wouldn't want to.
Horrible,
Never been asked, Jim,
though. No, I did a thing on Radio 2 once, jamming. Do you remember that, years ago?
That was like a long time ago.
Comedy,
yeah.
In inverted commas. Unless you're involved in which case it was hilarious, kind of comedy musical thing. And everybody on it was, they were all like great musicians. And I just thought, how am I going to, because I couldn't bluff it because it was on the radio.
Oh, God,
so, you know, just, I don't know how I got through that. Because everybody would, do it in E flat, change it. And I thought, how do you do that?
Yeah,
you know, I don't know.
Are you both big readers then? Obviously, you've both written, but are you quite fanatical about books, or do you dip in?
It's very tempting, isn't it, to do the obvious joke about
I hate books.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's not true.
I've never read a book.
Yeah. Noel Gallagher.
Is this a book podcast?
I can't read novels because they're about made up people. Yeah. Who was it who said that? It was Noel Gallagher who said that, wasn't it?
Probably Liam Gallagher. One of them.
About what? About made up people.
That's
great, yeah.
Something like that anyway. Yeah. It's just sort of insane to me.
I tend to read sort of probably about three biography to one fiction, if that makes sense. If I'm reading, it also depends on what I'm doing. If I'm recording an album, then I tend to read quite a lot. because it sort of takes my mind off it and tend to read something that's completely different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if I'm not doing that, if I'm doing something else, one of the other whatever activities I'm meant to do, if I'm sort of, you know, practicing my pole vaulting or something like that, I tend not to read, if you know what I mean.
But would you read a musical biography when you were mixing an album, for example, or would you stay
away?
I'm
a bit off musical biographies, to be honest. I've read quite a lot of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last decent one I read. I haven't really read a good one for a long time. I read the Cozy Fanny Tutti one from Throbbing Gristle was quite a good book, but I thought not for the reasons that other people thought it was good. I thought it was really good when Genesis P. Orridge kept on popping up as this awful person, this terrible sort of pantomime villain. But she was sort of like some boring sort of like middle-aged housewife throughout it, and it was really dreary. But then he kept on coming up and doing awful stuff and like doing these awful scams and really like rip everyone off for about, you know, 35 quid or something.
And that's the bit you enjoyed.
That was great. He was great, yeah. That was really funny. But that was the last music book I sort of read. That probably put me off for a bit.
Yeah. Oh, Jim Bob, you'd have to give him yours so that he can be put back on again.
I'm terrified of the thought of that.
give my book to Luke Haynes. scares me.
Good luck with that.
And what do you tend to go to for your reading then?
I've always got a novel on the go that I'm reading. So depending how long it takes me to... I only really read it. I tend to read it in bed.
Mm.
So how long it takes before I fall asleep. But I can't sort of, the thought of, if I'm getting near the end of a book and I haven't got another one to read, I get a bit panicky. I have to,
got to know what's coming next.
To buy another one and it tends to be new. A lot of American, in fact, almost exclusively American fiction
I
read.
Yeah, I read a lot of American fiction.
Usually the grim sort of, I like that kind of almost dreary stuff, which is just, you know, it's just about a bloke who gets up in the morning and then very matter-of-factly his... Yeah. Wife gets run over or something, and then he shoots his horse, and it's just that kind of thing. And then it kind of ends at some point.
A book you've read, or that you're?
I don't know. I just love that sort of stuff.
What's give me some authors that you've that you like reading?
So, Kent Harriff, Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah,
I was going to say that does sound like Cormac McCarthy. Yeah. I mean,
he's the really sort of terrifying end of it. Oh God. You put me on the spot.
I do this to people, and it's what I hate as well.
One of my favourite authors, I can never remember his name, and he's a musician as well, from Richmond Fontaine. Willie Vlautin.
Oh yeah,
like my favourite author at the moment, and his books are kind of like very much like that, very sort of, you know, matter of fact. And I don't know if I'd like them if they were set in England or Britain.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because they're in America that it's... there must be a reason why it's, you know, why I like American authors.
I quite like going to... I don't know if this is a sad thing or not, but I quite like going to places where those authors used to write. I'm thinking specifically about people like Raymond Chandler or Hemingway or something, because there's particular bars and places, certainly in California and New York, where they used to go. And the Duke Street Hotel in London is where I think... Ian Fleming used to write, and I just like going there and, you know, ordering a drink and sitting and sometimes taking their book, and I just have a sort of, not even if I don't necessarily even read it there, but just have that sort of this happened there, or
Cafe
the inspiration
Nero, Crystal Palace
there.
If you want to get the Jim Bob experience.
Oh good, that's good. Do you know what I was going to ask? Cafe Nero Crystal Palace is my next stop. No booze there though, sadly, because I do like to
bring your own.
Yeah. Well, I'll order a coffee and put something in.
I'm always so off my face on heroin by the time I start writing.
Yeah.
I don't need a drink.
So we're going to get to the book off very shortly. Before we do, I just wondered which titles you've decided to bring to pitch to us. Jimbo, what have you brought?
I've got What Is the What, which is a novel by Dave Eggers. It says on the front cover.
And it says it on the front cover. And what about you, Luke? What have you brought?
I haven't brought it in with me, but I have the novel I've chosen, the memoir, autobiography I've chosen, is Kinski Uncut by Klaus Kinski.
Right, okay. And for anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast before, this is where each of our guests is going to get 3 minutes on the clock to tell us about a book that they absolutely love, why they love it, and why they think we should all read it. And we'll do that very shortly. But before we get to the book off, I wanted to mention another podcast that you might like. It's good to share the love, isn't it? Good to share. Some of you may already know the brilliant columnist, host and writer Damien Barr. But what you may not know is that his Literary Salon, where some of the world's best writers share new books and reveal their stories, has a podcast too. Damien's Literary Salon's main home is the Savoy in London, but it's also available for your listening pleasure at home. Some of his past guests include Mary Beard, Armistead Maupin, and Rose McGowan, and I highly recommend it. So just look out for Damien Barr's Literary Salon on iTunes or SoundCloud, and to find out more about their events, you can check out theliterarysalon.co.uk. It's a very good listen.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So then, to the book off, gents. I have here, as you've already noted, a couple of my props. In fact, my father, who's a big fan of this podcast, actually thought that perhaps I put sound effects in and didn't know that these actually existed until he saw them in the flesh recently. So he's very excited to know that they are actually real.
I'm surprised you bring the whole bicycle in. Just remove the best.
That's how I get here. So we have
and
to
the
decide.
Whole far end as well.
We have to decide who goes first and who goes second, and who is going to be honked and who is going to be rung out. So, Jimbo, would you like to go first or second?
I have no preference.
That's helpful.
I don't mind going first. I mean, I have no preference about the things.
About the thing. Well, you'll go first.
I don't mind.
You will go
first. I'll set the bar low.
Which means, Jim, you get to choose your weapon.
Can I have the...
You can have the hot. Excellent. So, I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock. And
who'd have thought? All those years ago.
Yeah.
And it's over to you, Luke, to tell us about Kinski Uncut.
Kinski Uncut. Okay. Kinski Uncut is the memoir, or the unreliable memoir, unreliable autobiography of the great German actor Klaus Kinski. It was published in 1986, I believe, under the title. Now, this is where it gets a little bit kind of confusing. There's many sources that claim it was published under the title All You Need Is Love, but there are many sources that claim it was published under the title Kinski Uncut. What did happen is that as soon as it was published, it caused a sensation in Germany, where Kinski is a kind of, much like sort of Gainsbourg, was a national treasure in France. Klaus Kinski was a national treasure in Germany, perhaps sort of just less so here, maybe known more for his films with Herzog, Aguirre, Fitzcarraldo, Nosferatu, and
it was taken out of publication because it offended so many people, mainly his own family. Particularly, there was a lawsuit from Marlene Dietrich, where Kinski graphically describes a lesbian encounter, which for some reason he was privy to, between Marlene and whoever her lover was at the time. Now, it's a book that I recommend this book to people, I have to say, to read, partly because it's terrifying. It's one of the most demented books ever written. You can dip into almost, I was having a quick look at it before I came here, or you can dip into pretty much any page and it's hardcore pornography. And he's not fussy. Let's put it that way. Animals, inanimate objects are all part of Kinski's lust. It's an energetic kick, I would say, an energetic attack on all morality. It's utterly demented. It's the most damaging autobiography you could actually write about yourself. If you wanted to sort of destroy your life, this is the book you would write. Weirdly, when I wrote my own first book, I kind of picked it as a sort of template of sort of like, well, you can always go this far, but you don't have to go this far. It's back in print now, and I think it contains all the kind of expurgated versions are all bound together. So all the kind of litigious stuff. He lavishes hostility on Werner Herzog throughout, but Herzog claims that he actually co-wrote it with Kinski. So you decide.
Oh, wow. Brought it in just on time there. Look, wow. Yeah. Lots to discuss there, which we will.
That's not a low bar, that's a high bar.
No.
How do you feel, Jim, now?
it's a book about...
that was fab, Luke. We'll come back and talk a bit more about that. But first, we put 3 minutes back on the clock for you, Jim, to tell us about What is the What?
Okay, What is the What? When I read it, it was called What is the What? But I think it's been slightly changed. It's now called What is the What? The Autobiography of... Valentino Achekdang, which I had to write down, and I'm probably pronouncing wrong, because it's kind of because it's written as though it's an autobiography, so it's in Valentino Achekdang's voice, but it's actually written by Dave Eggers, so it's a true story, and it's about it's essentially about a boy. I think he's not even sure how old he is himself, so he's like either 8, 9, or 10 throughout the sort of book, and he basically he's in a village in Sudan, in the middle of sort of various wars that are going on, and it's attacked by villagers attacked by like Arab militia, and they kill most of the people, and he escapes, and him along with a load of other boys basically sort of walk 1,000 miles. So it sounds like a proclaimer song, doesn't it? I just realized they walk 1,000 miles to get to a refugee camp in Ethiopia, and so along the way he sort of encounter things like lions and crocodiles and, sort of various soldiers trying to kill them all the time. And these are little kids, you know. It's terrifying, sort of, and horrific, the whole thing. But, all that stuff's going on. And, there's one point I think he eats bits of wood because they have to sort of just find food wherever. So it's, it starts off, it's in sort of present day because he's, spoiler alert, he ends up in America as part of a Lost Boys program where they sort of 4,000 boys were allowed to come into America. Imagine that now, come to America. And so he's in his Atlanta apartment. I think he's at university by then, he's sort of grown up. And he gets burgled, and these people get into his apartment and kind of beat him up and steal his stuff. And I think he starts to think that he wishes he was back in his village, and that sets him off sort of telling the story about his sort of miraculous sort of journey across this 1,000 miles to this refugee camp. So it's kind of a story of survival and the fact that it's a novel, but it's also non-fiction as well, so it appeals to whatever whatever you're into the most. Both of those will be satisfied. And since then, he's the money, if you want to buy it, the money goes to to fund schools in the Sudan, and so you know, feel good about reading it. And I think since then he's become like I think he's the minister for education, the boy in it in South, I think it's South Sudan. So yeah, and I've recommended it to loads of people. My daughter always buys it for people. So yeah, buy it. What is it?
Wow, another great book and another brilliant pitch. I love both of those. Luke, if I can come back to yours, because I was not really knowing what to expect there, having not read this.
Oh, you're not, right, okay.
And
yeah.
just some of the things that came out there in that pitch of it just being, you know, one of the most damaging books one person could write about themselves, and yet he's done it, and then dipping in every page, and it's essentially like, well, it's very hardcore by the sounds of it.
It is, yeah. I mean, he's a bad, bad man. Mm. He's a really bad man.
So you obviously don't like him.
Oh no, I do like him. Yeah, I think it's fine. I mean, I think we live in a strange age where all art is supposed to come from a good place, and which is a very kind of bourgeois idea, sort of kicked around from the Renaissance, you know, if you like, that art has to be. And that's not really the case. And he's just this sort of unstoppable force. And I'm not saying I wouldn't condone his, who am I to condone anything? But, you know, you can't approve of a lot of what he's doing. And he has this monumental, I mean, the ego is just monstrous. Yeah. And one point he goes on, he does a one-man show as Jesus Christ, where he's like booed off by audiences. This is when he's already a huge star in Germany, and he just does this one-man show. And there is meant to be a film of this, because I've seen footage of this going around, but there's meant to be a documentary about it. And it's incredible. And he's just, you know, he just takes on, he'll take on 1,000 people. I mean, he's nuts.
Yeah, nuts.
It's great. I mean, no one is like that.
No.
Anymore.
No, no, no.
There's no one like it.
And actually, no one has probably documented it quite like that as well, I would think.
No, but it's all, I mean, another thing, I mean, it is, again, it's unreliable, because as I said, just as the time was finishing, that Herzog, there's a film that they made together, well, that Herzog made after Kinski's death, called My Best Fiend, which is about his relationship with Kinski. Because Herzog pulled a gun on Kinski on set, I think during Fitzcarraldo, because he had enough of his antics.
Oh,
and Kinski was often carrying a gun around anyway. Herzog actually claims in the documentary that he helped write some of the best insults that Kinski came up with against himself.
Right.
Because there's lots of stuff about, you know, oh, God, here comes Herzog again. He smells like shit. You know, he dresses like a fucking tramp. All this sort of stuff, you know. You know, he's not worthy of the air that I breathe, all this kind of stuff. And Herzog claims he wrote that stuff. We'll never know, because Kinski's dead. But there are a lot of issues with the book, obviously from various sources.
Yes, of course. Of course, but that doesn't necessarily make it change that it's a very good read, I imagine.
It's a very good read, yes, we can say that.
And Jim, another great pitch. Dave Eggers, obviously an absolutely brilliant writer. One thing that struck me straight away, as soon as you said it, I sort of went, really? Is that you said the funds go to schools in Sudan, which is a pretty amazing thing, isn't it?
Yeah, because I presume it sold quite a lot of copies.
So, I'm sure.
You know,
sure,
like,
it did.
I mean, it's not like me saying the funds
no,
from,
I'm sure
from my books.
I'm sure it's recouped its own
last album was purely for charity. it's very, you know, it's a very easy thing to say.
Yeah.
But this interesting idea of being written like a biography, and yet it's.
I mean, he's
fiction.
Done it. He's done it with a couple of. He did it with his book that came out after, because he seems to write a lot of books. I mean, I sort of question whether he writes all the books, because obviously he does, but there seems to be a lot of books, and he runs a publishing company and various sort of social sort of charity things that he does. But he'll just, you know, oh, there's another Dave Eggers book coming out, and it'll be something completely different, or it'll be a kid's book or something, or a book of recipes or something. So he's done three of these sort of, you know, where you're not really sure whether they're novels or, because they're, you know, they're about actual fact, they're factual, but they're kind of written like they're novels.
And he's just, well, I think he's just a great and prolific writer.
Yeah,
actually.
I mean, that's why I tried, like, the first, not in any way saying it's anywhere near, but the first Carter, but when I tried writing that, I found it really dull because it was all, you know, oh, we turned up with our guitars and, you know, so that sort of, yeah. I didn't want to get into that, that sort of, you know, talking about equipment and stuff like that. Mm. And it was basically dull. And then I read his heartbreaking work of Staggering Genius, which is his memoir. I think it's his, I don't know if it's his first book, but.
It's early though, isn't it?
I think, it's all over the place, you know, the back of it's upside down and he kind of, some of it's a novel, some of it isn't. And I realised that, you know, that was a way of doing it, you know.
Well, as is the way of the podcast, I've got to choose one to take home with me. So both brilliant pictures, as I said. I haven't read that particular Dave Eggers, although I've read quite a lot of his, so I'm very intrigued to read it. It's the best one. It's the best one, so Jim says. I will probably go ahead and read it. I'm going to take home Kinski Uncut today,
okay,
but for the sheer fact that
you like bestiality?
I really like bestiality. I like an animate object.
Yeah.
But I'm just so intrigued by it, I think. And I need to sort of read it to believe it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm going to like it, but I feel like
Your jaw will be on the floor.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. But I'll probably end up reading that Eggers as well. Like you said there, Jim, there's so many of them, aren't there, to get through. So
yeah.
You know, I've got to give.
People should probably buy the Eggers one because the money at least goes to
well, that's
rather than, rather than like Kinski's. Yes,
let's not give Kinski. Let's get Kinski out the library and let's buy the Dave Eggers because, you know, we want to give the money to Sue Dan.
Kind of.
That's a compromise, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah. Kinski wouldn't like it, but, you know.
Well, he's dead.
It doesn't matter, yeah.
Jim Bob's autobiography, In the Shadow of My Former Self, is out now, and you can see him on tour throughout the UK in October doing 4 dates in October.
Yeah, 4 dates, yeah.
Just you?
Just me. I'll have a band.
Oh, you've got the band this
which
time.
Which is unusual for me.
Excellent.
Yeah, and there's 4 dates, 2 of them are sold out, 2 of them aren't.
Oh, so which ones aren't?
I'd say if you live in Glasgow or Brighton, those are the ones you want to go to.
Glasgow or Brighton, ladies and gentlemen. And Luke Haynes' album, I Sometimes Dream of Glue, which came out last year, is obviously out now, and these are both on Cherry Red, and you're working on another, or have you mixed this album that you're talking about?
No, I'm just like watching Doctors in the afternoon for the next 5 years. I don't care anymore.
But we'll see in a couple of years what's happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know, like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Now TV. Mm-hmm. If those were around years ago, there would have been no Charles Dickens or Shakespeare.
No music.
No, of course not.
No. Well, it's been great spending an afternoon with you. Thank you both for coming in, for sharing your books and stories. And let's go get a drink. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.